You don't need that one, right?
How am I? Oops. I guess I'm good. Good morning, everybody. First of all, I'd like to thank Roger for inviting me here today. And although the seats are somewhat empty, I have been here so much and been the recipient of so much love from this community that I still see everybody in these, right, these pews. You see their smiling faces. You can still feel that they're with us here today. So very grateful to be here today. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Bethany Gagne, and I run something called the Global Peaceful Cities Project, or the Albany Peace Project, also known as the Schenectady Peace Project. Basically, we're into peace projects. And peace projects are essentially peace meditation research, where we ask people to move their awareness into their heart and to send intentions for peace. And we do measurements. We look at the crime at the city level to see how much of an impact our intentions have made. And many of you may not know some of our results. There was a 25% reduction of violence in Schenectady in 2018 in our focus area. And in 2019, there was a 30% reduction in crime in Albany in our focus area. My fascination with intention actually started 25 years ago when I was trained in something called biofeedback. Biofeedback is the art and science of teaching people how to use the mind to positively impact the body. So to me, I've seen the impact of people's minds for 25 years through biofeedback instrumentation. So it was just a natural extension for me to start thinking about, well, what would be intention outside of the body, right, and in prayer research. So I started the Peace Project, and in order to do that, I had to look. I'm always looking for best practices. I'm always looking for what is the best way to focus our mind to get to have the most impact in the world. And so today, I thought I would share a little bit about what I've learned and how I approach it at this point. It's very different than how I started years ago, and thought maybe there's many people here in this community that also studies energy medicine, those types of things. So I'm going to be combining a little bit of intention with energy medicine and talk. I've gotten very granular about it, okay? Because what is this that's happening when we send an intention or we send a prayer? Like, what is really going on there? And I've sat in deep trenches for years considering these questions. And so today I want to share with you a little bit today. And what I'm going to talk maybe a little bit differently about today that maybe you haven't seen so much is a lot of people talk about intention sending outside the body. I'm going to talk about calibrating inside the body before we send a prayer. Okay, this idea that doing something like heart hygiene, I'll call it. I love what Peggy was just reading about blessing our hearts before we would send an intention, those types of things. So we're going to talk about what would it be like, what is the environment from which we're sending the prayer? This is kind of like Bruce Lipton's book, The Power of Belief, where he talks about how he would look at stem cells, which were all genetically identical, but when he put them in different petri dishes, they all individuated into something very different. Okay, so this idea that the environment would influence how the cell evolved, and the environment from which our intentions spring up influenced the intention as well. And so what really brought my attention to this years ago was a study in 1997, and it was, it was in a journal called The Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine, and it was intercessory prayer in the treatment of alcohol abuse and dependence, a pilot investigation. So this study was an interesting study because essentially this was a rehab facility, and the theory was that they would, you know, divide up the people who were in rehab, and some of them would get prayed for by some reverends and some people wouldn't. And in the end, they wanted to see whether or not there was any difference. And what was interesting about this study is really not much, because basically there wasn't a difference between those that had been prayed for by the reverends and those not. Sometimes you see this in prayer research, and again, I often feel like it goes to what I'm going to be talking about today, because prayer is a little bit more technical. When you get into it, you start to understand why some things are more effective than others. But that all being aside, they did find one particular point that was noteworthy about this study. And this is what prompts my talk today, because when you're doing prayer research and you're doing intentional research, there's this understanding that you need to account for any extraneous prayer. Okay. So basically what they do is when they interview these people and they say, okay, you're going to be in this control group, do you have any friends or family members that are praying for you? And they account for that in the beginning of all these prayer research studies, right? So it's the problem of extraneous prayer. So they found that there was this one cohort that was getting prayed for by their family and friends. And in the end, that was the only cohort that showed a difference. And unfortunately, it's an interesting difference, okay? What they found is those who reported at baseline that a family member or friend was already praying for them were found to be drinking more significantly at 6 months than those who reported being unaware of anyone praying for them. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Do you see how I've gotten really granular about intention? Right? See, if we don't get the idea that our minds have impact, if we don't really get that, and that's been my challenge with the Peace Project for so long, because people don't actually think it could possibly work, but I'm telling you, your mind has power. Your mind has impact. And you want to be really careful where you go throw that thing. You throw your mind around, right? So what the researchers thought about this was maybe, if you think about this, if someone's been through rehab multiple times and has caused probably maybe a lot of damage and trauma to the family unit, you know, after a while they're praying from these probably like unclean hearts, you know, like, you know, damn it, God, you know, have them help them stop drinking kind of thing, right? That kind of thing. So the idea is that they were saying, you know, this should be investigated. So this study always really stuck with me about, you know, from how is the quality of my heart when I send an intention? Am I calibrated properly? Am I not tainting my intentions? Which is kind of challenging because often when we pray, we're praying when something, well, not always when you have a regular prayer thing, but often when we're praying more or whatever, it's this idea that, you know, you're praying more because there's more of an issue going on. Maybe there's more of a challenge. And that being said, you know, you understanding that those fears are just interlaying over things is very important for us to get clear. Edgar Cayce was very clear on this as well. He talked about when we went into meditation, we're basically amplifying our intentions. Okay. So the idea that we often, again, when, you know, we often meditate when we're stressed or whatever, it's this idea of like recognizing that you're actually amplifying at that time. Now, I'm going to give you some tools on how to do that because we need to be able to pray at those times and not worry kind of thing. But today I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to talk, there was basically Patanjali gave me a kind of an overall one way to start helping people calibrate in a very quick way. So I can go through these pretty somewhat quickly. They're called the five kleshas, or the five sufferings. And it's this idea that if we're in doing these things, that we are in a place of suffering, and therefore, the way I see it, if we're in this place of suffering, then we're not in unity consciousness. We're not connected to the infinite. And so we're really not calibrated properly. I'll just quickly go through these and how they relate to intention. So the first one is raga, I understand. It's called attachment. It's this idea of attachment. So this idea that you know, we've all heard in Buddhism, it says all suffering comes from attachment, right? We hear that, the ego doesn't like it, and we think, you know, oh, well, that's no fun. You know, what's life without attachment, right? You know, the idea of how do you live this life without attachment? But they don't tell you the other side to that. The idea is that all suffering comes from attachment, but when you release that attachment, you get your own energy back kind of given to you. And then you have more of your own energy to finance your life. So this idea also that when we're attached or clinging to things, I always say if you're clutching, gripping, or grasping, then you're actually pushing it away in the etheric. Okay? So the first thing we want to do when you sit down to send an intention is kind of pull in your attachments, kind of pull in and feel that. Now, the second thing is dvesha. I understand how it's pronounced. It refers to aversion or hatred. So this idea of recoiling from something, okay? So you can all feel this energetically, right? Often, and this goes to say things on the news and things like that, okay? This idea that when we're recoiling from things, we're pulling our energies in, that's called suffering. And when you're training in intention, you're training to embrace and love all. And so think of this idea that when we all transition from this world, which is always my litmus test, or that's always where I compare things to, is when I take my last breath, how will this look to me at that point? And on the other side, there is no rejection. There's nothing in this world. And, you know, I've trained in non-ordinary states of consciousness and have done a lot of work, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. But the idea that when you're kind of in those states of consciousness or you're on that other side, like there is nothing, everything is perfect. Everything, the word that comes to me is obvious. You realize that everything that's happening is really a natural outgrowth of everything that's been going on since the beginning of time. Like there is no beginning of anything. It's just everything is evolving at organically in its own way. And unfortunately, all that we're seeing on the news is all of this organic outgrowth, these things that have to come to the surface to be healed and those types of things, right? So understanding that to reject that is to not really honor the evolvement, the natural evolvement of everything that's happening at this moment. So in heaven's viewpoint, there is no rejection. So you're loving both sides. You're loving paradox. The idea, as M. Scott Peck used to say, being able to hold two sides of the truth and not go bonkers, you know, because truths are often paradoxes, right? So you're holding both. Number three, another suffering would be egoism. So the ego. One of the quickest ways to eliminate the ego is to become aware of your body in space. It's also how we eliminate the stress response. So being really anchored in the lower body, feet on the ground, become aware of your lower back, your breathing. That helps you quit a lot of that overthinking and enables you to kind of come down more into unity consciousness. So you're eliminating ego. If I'm sending a prayer that something, I forgot what it was, something like just last weekend, and I was like, void my ego on this. Like, just void my ego. I don't want my ego anywhere in this intention. Just make sure that I'm completely out of this. But I really want that, you know, that kind of thing. I forgot what it was. What was it? It wasn't the cat, was it? It was something last week. It was an intense situation. So the idea of we've got to get our ego out of it. Okay. That's just not that, because in the ego, we're in separation. We're not in unity consciousness. Okay. So it's all about kind of being connected to the other side, as we're going to get in these last two. So the last two to me go together. I believe it's pronounced abhinivissa. I was practicing this earlier, and avidya. And the idea that fear of death, so that would be that same recoiling, that this idea, and this could be really challenging, especially if you have a health challenge, right? And the fear of death, and then also this ignorance of the infinite self. Because understanding that all spiritual traditions, what are we doing in all spiritual traditions? We are practicing shifting our identity. We're practicing unplugging the plug from our temporal identity here in this world and plugging into the plug of an infinite identity, that we are eternal, we are immortal, we are infinite beings. And that's the whole game that we're playing here. We're here to wake up. We're here to remember that here in physical form. And unfortunately, nothing teaches us that as well as usually suffering, you know, challenges, right? Because if everything was good, we wouldn't be sitting here asking these bigger questions. We wouldn't be waking up in this life. So all of these challenges are all a wake-up call for us to go, remember who you are. Remember that you're an infinite creature and you're waking up in this body. And that's the whole game, the divine play of being here is waking up and remembering the divine play. So those are the five sufferings that has to do with kind of calibrating ourselves when we sit down to meditate. Now, I want to particularly talk about this last one, because basically you can overcome fear of death the more that you step up into your identity and you like know who you are and you kind of living between the worlds and you're living in infinite awareness. Then the fear of death doesn't bother you so much, because you're like, you can just totally see yourself seamlessly as the level of consciousness going through. So I want to talk about that for a moment, because over time, you know, I certainly have played with all sorts of states of consciousness. I've felt really separate from God in my darkest times, and I felt like totally held and blessed and loved at the same in dark times. And I want to talk about, again, this is my biofeedback training. I am so fascinated with how to tune your body like an instrument to be able to tune to the other side. And over time, years, that's what I've been training in. My students, I call them intentional coherence athletes, because we're grooming the body. We're training the body like athletes to be able to hold awarenesses of higher states, of non-ordinary states of consciousness. So what I'm showing you here is basically two brainwave patterns. So I've been trained in EEG neurofeedback. So I train in brainwave specifically for my meditation. And if you can see here, there's two different pictures, and there's quite a big difference between the two pictures, right? If you see at the top here, there's the a lot of yellow-red up here. And you can see how they're very different on each side. Like the green here is different than the green here, you know, purple and the is different as well. At the top here are what they call high beta brainwaves. So that would be when we're highly stressed. And at the bottom here in the purple is the delta where when we go to sleep at night, that becomes more of the dominant brainwaves. Okay. Now, this is what we typically walk around in. And this is what's happening with all of the protests is people are all in this brainwave pattern. Okay. So in this brainwave pattern, what happens is we're totally externally focused. And it's everything about out here. We're feeling very separate from everyone. And it's hard for us to feel connected, right? It's hard for us to feel, and I'm not saying this is always happening in all the protests. I'm just saying that the anger response, the stress response, the violent response, all of that, I love teaching this to young kids because when they get it, that it's really just a place in their nervous system and they can tune themselves to relate to the world differently, then they get access. It's like if they feel so empowered. It's like learning how to play a video game, but the video, the technology is your own nervous system, right? So what's happening in this brainwave pattern is because everything outside of me is so separate than me, then the thinking is not so clear and God can feel really distant. Okay. You see here that the green here is very narrowed and that's an alpha brainwave, which has to do with well-being. Okay. Now we close our eyes. We sit here. We listen to the gorgeous music that the musicians play. We start to come down. Notice how, see how the band's here? See how they got so much quieter, right? Our heart opens. We start to get this alpha bridge. And then with the theta, your theta widens and your delta, which is your connection to the divine, opens. Okay? So this idea that we're tuning ourselves. And at this point, I can hear you. So if you're angry at me and I'm holding this pattern, I can hear you and I will take you in. I'm strong enough, I'm stable enough to take you in and I can hear your challenges, right? So what can happen is we can be sitting there praying. Maybe we're super stressed. Somebody's in the hospital. We're in this ordinary mind and God can feel so distant and not here. And I'm here to tell you that He's here. We just need to tune ourselves deep within to be able to connect to the other side. Now, when we're doing that in this alpha bridge, what happens is we're online with ourselves in here and we're in line out there. So we're both present to ourselves and other at the same time. Okay. And until, and this is why I've been so passionate about teaching this for so many years, and, you know, is because until we get to this brainwave pattern, because by the way, there's other brainwave patterns. Like this is just like the first one out of, you know, whatever. Until we get to here, all this stuff, do you see why it just keeps going and going and going? And until we train people to come into command of their nervous systems, we're just shooting in the dark, right? It's just a lot of work with very little, you know? So anyway, so that's why I'm so passionate about it. So let's go, I'll go on to the next one here. There we go. Oops. So I'm going to do a meditation with you now. So I want you to start thinking about something that you would like to create in your life or something that you'd like to set intention about. And now I'm just going to quickly say some things about external intention. There's, you know, it's hard to put all this in a little talk, but I wanted to give you maybe some different concepts for your prayer life, okay? I really do believe, I've often said, if everything's organically going as it is, why am I, God, why am I here? Like what, how can I possibly benefit the situation? Like how, you know, and I loved it when I read in the Course in Miracles, it says, our job is to begin the miracle. It's to begin the miracle. So when we're sitting down to set an intention, we're going to set something in motion, that wasn't there already. Okay. And the idea is that the reason why when we're sending an intention, we're actually like adding energy to a situation. So think about it when you're praying, you're actually doing kind of like a Reiki treatment on it. You're actually sending energy to the situation because that's what you do in healing. If there's an injured injured part of your body and someone lays hands on you, they're becoming this channel to move energy through your field. So your body has more energy to heal and metabolize and move through the block and obstruction than it would if it didn't, right? So when we're praying, we're basically sending energy. We're sending love. And the way we do that is we want to open our hearts. We want to make sure that we've cleansed our heart. And clean our heart. If you feel as though you can't, if you feel as though you're too invested, this is just a trick I've used over the years. I'll say something like, Holy Spirit, I almost like I should not be praying. I'll go through the Holy Spirit. I'll send it through the Holy Spirit as opposed to from me, because I don't want any of my stuff, unresolved stuff, on the situation. Okay. So that's something you could do if you feel really, really too wound up in it. The idea that we're using unconditional love, because unconditional love is the, you know, especially according to Barbara Brennan, it heals everything. Okay, so unconditional love, you blast an area with unconditional love, and also we're going to be sending light. Okay, so I found over the years, light always, anytime you pray, send light. Always connect light between the hearts of everyone involved. Okay, so we're adding information. You want to open your heart. We're going to open our heart by invoking it, by feeling feelings of love. So that's part of the protocol as well. And then finally, so two other things I want to talk about. And that is that when we send an intention, we're going to practice. And you'll know when we get into those lower brainwaves to go light, light, light. Right? And like we're going to send an intention that is so light and so airy. I often think of Tinkerbell with the little wand. I should have brought one today because I actually have them. But it's this idea that you just want, because the higher realms, that's the energy of the higher realms. They're light, 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 light. Okay. So, and the lightest touch possible. And then you back off or whatever. And then we surrender these intentions over to the infinite, because quite frankly, the infinite respects us so much that if we want to hold on to the intentions, the universe is like, cool, you know, you keep holding on to it. Like when you're ready to let it go, we'll step in, but you've got this for now. So we're just going to respect you just the way you got it. So we really practice this idea of like surrendering over the intention to the infinite. And I often have people, and I got this from a friend of mine, Bill, to open up your hands and actually kind of open up the hands and let the intention go that way. Okay. So you want it out of your nervous system and into the etheric so that it can start using its amazing algorithm that is equal opportunity for every human being and calculate it in such a way that's going to come out so much better than your little intention could have done. Okay. So, all right. I think I've got everything there. Just as far as opening the heart, we're going to start, and this idea that we're going to invoke it by generating feelings of appreciation, love, and care. So something that's easy to love. So I guess if the musicians or someone could come up to do some intentional work. So in closing, as they get there, I want you to, so we're going to practice initially by this idea of we're going to come down into the lower brain waves and start to connect to the portion of yourself that fire can't burn and water can't get wet. So this idea that you are infinite, and if you ever saw the beauty of your own spirit, you would just grimace with beauty. Like you are this amazing, gorgeous entity being, and that's the space. You want to kind of take your seat in who you are, and understanding that, and from that place, send the intention. So staying anchored and centered and balanced within the body, shoulders far away from the ears, breathing deep down into the belly, feeling the surface underneath you, and trusting that service is holding you up so you can surrender. Release any clutching, gripping, or grasping in the body. And feeling that softness around your body, that permeability. When we feel love, love goes to the surface, or blood goes to the surface of the body. And understand that right around you is your sphere of your spirit. So becoming aware of the sphere of light around you, all the way around, 360 degrees, under your feet, over your head, like that's who you are. And starting to identify with that. Your body just happens to be in the middle. Your body is just to let people know where your spirit is. And practice, you know, getting a sense of the field around you. And if it feels concave in anywhere, or you feel like it's kind of almost dented, press it out a little bit. And understand that if you feel anywhere in your body where you feel any energy blocks or whatever, on the other side of that is heaven. And the more we train in releasing these blocks, becoming aware of the ethers around us, lowering our brain waves so that we can sense these subtler vibrations, the more we remember this grand journey that we're all on, of waking up in these physical bodies and remembering that we're infinite. So now bringing your awareness to whatever it is you would like to create or whatever it is you're sending intention and love to this morning. And take a moment and determine whether or not you are recoiling or you're clutching at it. And keep your awareness anchored both inside yourself and gently aware of the intention. And if you find yourself recoiling about an aspect of it, embrace it, love it all. And bringing your awareness to your heart, and bring to mind something or someone that's easy to love, hopefully about this situation or something else, but allowing your heart to blossom and open. How big can your heart expand? And now holding this situation in your mind, and imagine just becoming this channel for love and light, maybe coming through your crown and out through your heart, and just blessing the entire situation, warts and all. Loving it, holding it, honoring it for how it's appearing now, how it's evolved. And noticing when we see things from this perspective, maybe new ideas are coming up, new thoughts. And as you do this, just blessing, giving this situation unconditional love and light, all the way around, allow an organic intention to just rise to the surface. Maybe less of your mind, but more from your spirit. And as you, it starts to kind of formalize in your mind, see if you can just stay as light as possible. Don't clutch at it. Don't grip at it. Just keep it as light as possible. Asking to avoid our egos, to be of service. Asking for the highest and best for all concerned. Spirit is equal opportunity. It has a way to meet everybody's needs at once. Your job is to begin the miracle. Holding yourself in sacred relationship with it. And imagine, sometimes I really will imagine like a little fairy dust going around and lighting it all with the most gentle, lightest touch possible. And seeing it come to its natural kind of fruition, where everyone feels whole and complete and loved and honored. It's not your job to do all that. Your job is to begin the miracle for that. You do not have to solve it. Your job is to beckon it, invite it, to download it for other people or for the situation. And when you're very clear, take a moment, smile from ear to ear, keep your heart light. You are working in the etheric right now. This is real stuff. Your mind is that powerful. And when you're ready, maybe imagine opening your palms or opening your palms and imagine it just sending it off into the infinite love that loves and adores us all, that cherishes us, allowing it to be released and taken care of. And take this final moment to bask in your own sublime energy, your own knowing of who you are in the infinite. Smiling, remembering. You don't have to go back and clutch at it. Let it go. It's not you. Let it go. Phew. And now seeing yourself go through the next 24 hours, what would it be like if we could hold these states in our nervous system for the next 24 hours? How would we talk to people differently? How would we walk? Would we saunter instead of walk? Would our shoulders be down? Would our hearts be light? We would laugh more easily. If we truly got it, that everything's taken care of, our job is to just begin the miracle, open up, and remember. So when you're ready, see if you can still maybe just open your eyes gently, look down at the floor, still keep a soft periphery in your nervous system and your body. Allow the environment in softly, as if you're merging with it, feeling that oneness that you can feel in lower brainwaves. And as the musicians come up, just allow the music to kind of come through you. And feel the other side. And thank you for your time today.